welcome to another episode of the Send Mum Club podcast, the parenting podcast with a difference. I'm your host, Gemma. I hope you are doing well. Thank you so much for choosing to listen today. A little update from me. I don't know if you follow the Instagram for the podcast or mine, actually. If you do, you'll have seen this. And if you don't, the Instagram for the podcast is at the Send Mum Club. Leo had his first parents' evening at preschool. He started in January, and I suppose we've all had this. As a parent anyway, I think you're nervous to send your kids to nursery or preschool. But when that child has an additional need, it just adds an extra layer and you're using kind of different eyes, aren't you, to look at what's important. And I guess the things that you're worried about for your child as well are different. So we had parents' evening, and honestly, it couldn't have come better. I had to stop myself crying because they were just so lovely. So at the minute, Leo's in mainstream. I'm fully aware that might change, but for now, it's the perfect place for him in his preschool. And apparently, like all the other kids love him, and sometimes they argue about who gets to sing him songs because he loves nursery rhymes. And the teacher was saying that whenever it's, because they haven't specifically said this yet, but I think at the minute he probably mostly needs a one-to-one as well. So whoever it is that's one-to-one with him apparently is made up that they're getting to hang out with Leo that day. And it was just, I felt like such a weight had been lifted off my shoulders, because I knew he was having a nice time because he asks to go to school now. But there was that worry where I was thinking, oh God, might they go, yeah, this isn't really working. Like we aren't able to meet his needs or whatever, but it didn't. It was perfect. And I'm just delighted. So now it's on with the EHCP, which has been difficult already, as I've previously mentioned, but I'm going to stick to the positives for now. Right, now on to this week's guest. Now, this is an episode that I actually recorded, God, months ago. It might even have been back in January. And for whatever reason, it just hasn't gone out yet. The guest had been on my hit list for a while because obviously, the majority of people I speak to on this podcast are mums. Obviously, it's called the Send Mum Club. But there are some other, I guess, concerns and worries that I have that I know other parents also share around siblings and how this new journey that we're on will affect siblings. Maybe that's children that you've already got and now you've had a child with an additional need, or maybe your first child has an additional need and you're thinking, oh God, I don't know, is it the right thing to have another baby? How would we cope? What would the impact on our family be? So I thought I'd like to get somebody on who is a sibling of somebody who is now an adult who has an additional need. And I thought there couldn't be anyone more perfect and more of a, I guess, an inspiration considering what he's gone on to do. And that is Christian Lang from Standout Socks. Now, if you don't know what Standout Socks are, I'm sure you've heard of them. They are the company that, I guess, rose to fame on Dragon's Den. Now, Christian set up the company with his partner Natalie and his brother Ross, and Ross has Down syndrome. So Christian has that lived experience of growing up in a family with somebody with Down syndrome. Now, we obviously talk about Christian's experience, but I've tried to make this more growing up with a child who had an additional need, you know, in a situation that maybe looked different to what your friends did. So although Ross obviously does have Down syndrome, that I tried not to make it too Down syndrome specific, if you get what I mean. So that's kind of the reason that I wanted to have Christian on, to talk about that experience, but also to talk about the amazing work that he does with Standout Socks. Because again, if you don't know who they are, they employ people to work for them who have Down syndrome, and they pay those people. Now, you might be listening thinking, well, of course they pay them. Do you know what? After speaking to Christian, I was shocked at how rare that was and how small those opportunities are. So actually, a big chunk of this episode is talking about how the world works in terms of work for people with additional needs and how much still needs to change. So I really hope that you find this chat interesting. I did. I found it gave me hope in terms of, well, just wait till you hear how Christian talks about his upbringing with Ross and how they interact as adults now, because it will make you feel really good. And it was really interesting to get into the nitty gritty of the work situation as well. So here we go. Christian Christian, thank you so much for taking the time to come on the podcast and chat to me.
No worries at all. It's a pleasure.
Not many men have managed to infiltrate this podcast yet, but you've been on my hit list for a while, because we are going to have a conversation that I haven't yet had. Well, in fact, I've had it in real life, but I haven't had it on the podcast. And that conversation is about growing up with a sibling with an additional need. And in this case, it's Down syndrome. And we're going to be talking about your kind of childhood with your brother Ross, and then what that's led to afterwards.
I mean, from my opinion, every probably childhood is different. And as much as we can kind of talk about mine, it doesn't mean it's going to be the same for everybody else's. But hopefully with a bit of insight, it could help a few people.
As the mum of a child with Down syndrome, and I know that many other parents feel this, it is a worry that a lot of people have, like, is this too much for siblings? Is it going to be a burden? Is it going to be just this big bad thing? Now, personally, I can already see that it's teaching Leo's older siblings. He's got an older sister and an older brother. And I can already see that it's teaching them beautiful lessons that they definitely wouldn't, unfortunately, have learned if it wasn't for Leo. I'd like to have thought that they would, but, you know, they're definitely getting a positive experience out of having Leo with his Down syndrome. But I can understand why, and you know, maybe if somebody's child has a bigger need than my Leo does, I can understand why parents would feel like that and have those concerns and that anxiety. And I think the other thing that seems to be quite a common factor is the future. You know, what's going to happen when I'm not here? How are they going to get on as an adult? And that, we will come to that with you, Christian, because, well, for context, you are the co-founder of Standout Socks, which everyone in the Down syndrome community will know what it is. Everyone who watches Dragon's Den will know what that is, but we'll come on to more of that later. Just before we go back, will you just tell me about Ross now as an adult?
Ross now as an adult, he is charismatic. Cheeky, a character. He's like, you know, when bees go to honey, he's the honey. He's had the same fiver in his wallet for the last 25 years. It's one of them big ones. You know, he's never bought a pint in his life. He's killing it. He's absolutely killing it. So when people awe him, I'm just like, don't awe him. He's got such a great life. Obviously, it comes with, if you want to say negative, I don't know what the word is, but yeah, he's sound.
And you told me he's just come back from a cruise, hasn't he?
Yeah, so he had the last 3 months of the year off because he had an operation on his foot, and now he's just been for a cruise around the Canaries.
Gorgeous, love that for him.
He might make it back into work at some point. but he's him. And I wouldn't change him for the world. He's funny.
What's the age difference between you and him?
Nearly 5 years. So he's May, I'm April. So just, it's 4 years mainly, but 5 years.
And you're older, right?
I'm older. We've got a little sister as well, who's 2 years younger than him. So I'm the eldest, and I was the oldest grandkid on the side as well. I have got 5 aunties and uncles. I went from being the middle of everybody's world, and then Ross entered the equation, and I was like, well, what about me? What about me over here? But yeah, like you said, it's probably taught me more than you could ever say in words. Just the empathy side of it, the responsibility side of it. You know, these arguments that, you know, and I'm open to all these conversations that, you know, at 5, I probably had to grow up a little bit quicker than most 5-year-olds and take on a bit more responsibility and look after myself a little bit more. I don't resent that in any way. It just kind of is what it is. But my parents always made time. Me and my dad used to go and watch the football. Me and my mum did karate. So they always made time for me in that sense. And Ross was always painted as a positive. When I speak about Ross, I always highlight, look, I'm not a parent, I'm a sibling. And I had a great bunch of mates that took him in. And, you know, he's had a top life.
So and how so old, have I. How old's Ross now?
Ross is coming up to 40. He's 39.
Okay, so we're talking 80s. I was trying to work out. My maths is dreadful. It took me longer than it should have
done. So Ross was born 87.
Okay.
So my mum was told sorry. You know, it was in them days.
Hey, the sorry still happens. I was told sorry.
No, of course. I, you know, you like to think now with the work of standout charities, etc., the more people with Down syndrome in the mainstream, that that's changing, hopefully. People are starting to see it as a much more positive light, and I hope we're going a long way to helping that fact. But I'd like to think that that doesn't happen anymore. But, you know, unless you're around people with Down syndrome, you don't get it. You know, unless probably you're around somebody with a learning disability, you don't get what they bring to your life. Do you know what I mean? And the lives of people around you. So if you come from a, it's all down to public education and environment. And if you've never been educated or you're not in that environment, then from the outside in, it could be seen as a negative. And I appreciate all that. You know, these people that are saying these words, they're not coming from a place of hate or trying to upset, or they're just not educated or aware.
I wasn't, Christian, to be honest with you. I'm quite open about that. So I'd never even met anybody with Down syndrome before I had Leo. So when we were told, sorry, and I will say, because our consultant, who's still Leo's consultant now, is absolutely lovely. She did use that word, but it wasn't in a, oh my God, this is dreadful way. And she's been extremely supportive. But yes, that word is problematic. But at the time, that felt like an appropriate word to hear, because I was like, well, this is the worst thing that could have happened to us. That, I mean, obviously I don't feel like that now, but at the time, because I didn't have any knowledge of Down syndrome. I was completely uneducated. I was ignorant. I'll be very honest about that. I like to think I was a nice person, but in terms of any kind of learning disability, there was just nothing there whatsoever. So you're right. And although it is changing, I completely agree with you that you have to have been immersed in that world. Well, not immersed, but you have to have dipped around a toe into that world, yeah, to understand that actually it's a positive. And the people and the children and the experience I now have of Down syndrome, I wouldn't change Leo. I would change how the world works and certain systems that aren't working and funding, but I wouldn't change him.
You know, it's good that you can have these, that, you know, it goes a long way that you can have these open conversations about that, because probably you were what you expected for childbirth up to that point, and you'd already been through it once. For it to all change in a conversation, it is a lot. You obviously envisaged it. So I know my mum envisaged me having a little brother to play football with and play basketball, you know, and climb trees and this and that and the next thing, like every parent does. You know, it's what every parent does. For then, for a conversation to happen, for that to change, my mum didn't find out till Ross was born.
Yeah, I was so the same.
All right, okay. So for then that to change is it kind of, oh, all right, okay. Then all them 9 months of thoughts that you've had is taken. Not taking away, you know, we struggle with these words, Gemma, I get it, because we're trying to, as much as we talk about it, we don't want to say the wrong thing at the same time. Yeah, does that make sense? And we're trying, you know, it's taken away is what I was going to say, whether that's the right word or not, I don't know.
Well, no, it is. It's the future that you'd imagined, it was described to us by our therapist as your preferred future, has now changed. But what's interesting, I think, is, and my husband had the same thing, you know, all these things that he'd imagined, but Leo might not like those things anyway, even if he didn't have Down syndrome. He might want to go and watch Aston Villa play with my husband. I mean, I can't imagine anything worse than that, but he might hate football, and that's nothing to do with a diagnosis. In his case, you know, he would be physically able to do all of those things. It's whether he wants to or not, isn't it? And you don't know what any kid's going to be into.
Yeah, it's got, like I said, it's good you can have these conversations, because again, I've not been through it. I'm a sibling. I can empathize of what my mum and dad went through, for example. But then going from that low to kind of working out that it's positive and good, and, you know, what it brings, you know, what Down syndrome brings. Look, everyone's an individual again. So again, you can't really talk. It's nothing but positive and special, and we're lucky and et cetera. And again, I'm talking as a sibling. So the life expectancy for Ross in the 80s was 30.
That's crazy.
Now I think it's up to 70s. So for the first time, societal, people with Down syndrome are now outliving their parents. So there has to be a future plan. Do you know what I mean? I don't even know why I flipped over to that. I don't know where that conversation started.
We are going to get onto that, though, because it is something that's important, and it's something that every parent has to think about in a way that you wouldn't have to think about with typical children that didn't have any extra need. I am interested to know, though, you said that you felt like you had an extra layer of responsibility growing up. How so?
Protective. It was very protective of Ross. I did a bit of therapy, and I sat with a therapist, and I told her about my family, and she went, "Ooh, you must have found that hard." And I was like, protective and defensive straight away. I was like, "No, like, what do you mean? Don't you say that? I'll jump over this desk." She said it in a way. I'm just picturing this little boy who's 5 years old that's gone from the center of everyone's universe to now having to share that. And it was like, do you know what? And this is not me looking for an aura or something like that, but I think it's something that parents need to be aware of, that, you know, siblings have to, whether they like it or not, they just do it. They just step up. I did anyway. My little sister did. My little sister has been nothing but great with our kid. I still joined the forces and travelled, and our kid's always been there to step in when, you know, my mum and dad wanted to go out or something like that. My sister's been really good with that. But growing up as a young kid, you're over, I was protective of Aros. You know, you'd see people look, and it's, you know, again, it's normal because it's something different. But for me, it was like, what are you looking at?
Yeah.
You know, I'll...
Do you think that wanting to protect came naturally to you? Or do you think that's something that you were kind of spoken to about by your parents? Like, you are going to have to take on this role? Or do you think that just happened?
I think that just happened in my case. But it might in other cases not. For the way my parents brought us three up, it was never negative. It was always a positive. And then my mates were really good. I just stress that as much as my family's really good. My friends are really good with my little brother as well. He comes out with us on a Kate. I mean, I don't go out anymore. I'm in my 40s, but, you know, going through my 20s and stuff, he'd come out with us. They always made a big fuss of him. We had a proper bubble of family and friends around Ross. Not to protect him, but at the end of the day, he was funny. He was ace. You know, everyone wanted to be around him. It wasn't the fact that everyone was like, oh, like, come here. It was, you know, I want to be around him. He's funny. He's cheating. Do you know what I mean? That's the way it was. The way it was for me. I don't think the overprotective comes from that. I just probably felt it was my responsibility as a little kid that. And that's for any big brother, I suppose.
So I've had this conversation, but not on the podcast. So there's a lovely girl called Natalie who, when Leo was born, messaged me on Instagram. And she's got a brother called Jake who, I don't actually know how old Jake is, but he's an adult. He's a young adult. And she basically sent me just a really lovely message out of the blue saying, you know, I've just seen on Instagram that you've had Leo, and I just wanted to kind of let you know that this isn't awful. Like, me and Jake, you know, Jake lives this lovely life. Sounds quite similar to Ross, like really social, out all the time. Again, her friends and people around her family, very inclusive, involved him in everything. But she did kind of highlight to me that there were certain things. It wasn't quite as easy as him just joining in. There were certain factors that she, well, still does when she takes him out, has to kind of take into consideration. Did you feel the same, or was it easy? Did he just crack on? And
no, he's got me home on occasion. There's stuff like when we were younger, there was nowhere for him to play football, for example. No teams would entertain him. You know, there was no, he couldn't do karate, for example. It was stuff like that. Looking back now, I probably wasn't subjected to it as much as my mum and dad, but stuff like that frustrates me now that there's nothing like that out there. That's why we do a lot of stuff with Brentford Penguins, because that's what they provide in London. In regards to going out, you know, there was, like I say, there's times through my early 30s that Ross got me home. I remember one Christmas night that we went out with the lads, and I don't know how he got me home, to be honest. But whether that's responsible or not, I don't know. But with Down syndrome, it's easier. I don't know if it don't make any sense here. Because when you look at Ross, instantly, for 99.9% of society, they can see that Ross might need some extra help.
Well, it's visual Down syndrome, isn't it? You can usually tell that someone has it by looking at them.
So at 99.9% of society will overprotect him, will look after him, will give him a bit of leeway, will, do you know what I mean? Will can see it, so will act. So my best mate's uncle has got autism, and us four went out. And because it's not visual with Tony, when he's being loud and himself, he comes across like he's had a drink, but he's not. But you can see people, they're like, whereas if it's Ross, it's a bit more like they can see it. So he gets, do you know what I mean? People are buying him drinks. You know, he floats through pubs and clubs like, you know, people are dancing with him. He's the life and soul of the party because people can see. And whether, look, I always say I don't like to box people with Down syndrome, but your general, people with Down syndrome are amazing people that are the life and soul of the party, that are on the dance. You know, we go out for a Christmas meal with our lot and they don't finish the starter. You know, when we do our Christmas dinner, we go out and we go out with other businesses into Halliwell Jones, which is the Warrington Wolves Stadium. You know, our lot won't have finished the starter and they're on the dance floor. And it's ace. And then the whole party is the best. You know, people are saying, when a stand-up socks booking because we want to book that night. So, yeah, it could, because it's more visual, he gets away with a lot more. I don't know how you would put it, but it's easier because people want to protect him.
That's a really interesting way to look at it. And I'd never really thought about it like that. I suppose if I've thought about Leo being an adult in situations like that, I guess my mind has always gone towards the negative if I've thought there, no, because, oh, you know, because it's obvious. But it's really interesting to hear you kind of frame that in such a positive way. And that makes sense as well.
Literally 99.9%. There's always going to be some wrong people out there, don't get me wrong, that will see it and take advantage of it. But people will see that and take advantage of it in anybody.
Yeah.
You know, but the 99.9% of society will help Ross. Will, if they see something happening, will go and protect Ross. Will make sure he's okay. Will speak to him. Ross walks around and everyone says hello to him. Nobody says, not that I need anybody to say hello to me, but. Do you know what I mean? Ross will walk around anywhere and people will make eye contact with him and say hello, and now Ross will say hello back. Day to day, people don't do that. It's a positive, honestly. I can see the dark side of it where, well, you know, I could go out and get taken advantage of. It's these wrong people out there that do wrong things. People are less likely to stick up for me.
Yeah, it's a really interesting point, that. And I've heard people say this about people with Down syndrome, and I do see it in Leo, but then sometimes I'm like, do I see it or am I just being biased? It does feel like people are drawn to him.
Yeah, completely.
And it does feel like he brings people joy in a way that just being a toddler wouldn't have the same effect.
When Leo gets set to an adult, it will still draw people in because people know that Leo will have an alternative motive. He's not trying to take advantage of anyone. He's not trying to be manipulative. He's not trying to, you know, use someone. You know, when people are around Ross, they know he's Ross. They know he's treating people. He treats people all the same. No matter who you are, he doesn't want anything from you. You know, and that is the gold that people with Down syndrome have, because people realize that, you know, he's not, Ross is never going to, Ross is comes, all comes from love. Mm. All comes from a really positive, nice place. He's not trying to take advantage of you. He's not trying to use you. He's not trying to... And everyone does that day to day, you know. But people, you know, I'm not putting them in boxes again, but Ross doesn't.
Yeah.
And people are drawn to that because they know they can trust that relationship, because there's no alternative, you know, there's no ulterior motive in that relationship. It's just all love and all positive. So you'll find that as Leo grows, people are drawn to him through that because comes from the best place.
You've obviously grown up with Ross through, well, the end of the 80s and then, you know, until now. And the end of the 80s, early 90s, well, even 10 years ago, I would probably say, would be different in terms of society than what it is now. Do you feel like, say, for example, when you've been out with him as kids or, you know, teenagers going into adulthood, do you feel like people's reactions to him are different? Have you had though? Have you had bad experiences? Maybe you haven't.
No, not that stick in my head. The only bad experience I can really remember is I used to manage nightclubs, and I used to manage nightclubs in Sunny Beach in Bulgaria. And when Ross would come over, he'd get free row of the club, and the security would keep an eye on him. And one night, apparently, two girls were taking the mick out of him dancing. But again, I put that down to uneducation. Ross wasn't aware of what's going on. You know, uneducated, did it, but people's will to protect him was off the scale. Do you know what I mean? And apart from that, kids stare, but again, that's because they're uneducated and unaware. You know, that's fine. But apart from that, even with standout, when we first started standout, I said to my mum and dad, look, we're going to put Ross out there. I can't promise there might be no negative reaction to that. You know, there is some idiots out there that might write bad comments or take, you know, but on the whole, we don't really get any negative.
Well, that's interesting, actually, if you're talking about social media, because obviously as a business and, you know, you have to have that social media presence, the type of business that you are, you're promoting it in a specific way, as you should. People in person are very different to people hiding behind a screen. And we all know there's a terrible, terrible group of people on social media who hide behind whatever and type awful things to all manner of different people. You know, you could be the nicest person in the world doing the best thing in the world. You could cure cancer and someone on the internet will have an issue with you. Yeah. How have you found that response on social media to what you're doing?
I'm not saying it. We've never had a negative comment, but like, firstly, if you get a negative comment, everyone will go in.
Yeah.
Everyone goes in straight away. Sometimes it'll just be a tongue in cheek. Like, there's the video online of Ross doing knock a door run on 10 Downing Street, and people will, you know, play with the downward and stuff, you know, like that. And that, I just, for me, I don't really entertain it. It's just, anytime anything like that happens, I just put it down to it's your loss. You know, if you're not educated enough and aware of how much fun I'm having over there, over here, then you stay over there, mate, and comment what you want. But, you know, I think we've had to delete 2 comments in 4 years.
Okay. I mean, I've had to delete probably more than that on my Instagram because... not the podcast Instagram, but my personal Instagram, I put videos. I was quite conscious. And don't get me wrong, I love people that have accounts that are all about, you know, autism or Down syndrome. And I have personally, as a mum, found those accounts incredibly helpful, you know, in terms of finding community and feeling less alone, certainly when we first got Leo's diagnosis. But I didn't want to make my Instagram that. So my Instagram is about me, obviously, because it's mine, and Leo features on it. And I do post things about Down syndrome because I do want to educate people, well, like me, because I didn't know anything about it before. Yeah. But I've had to delete comments on posts about Leo on my Instagram, like really, really awful comments. But to the point where they're so bad that I'm like, there's something wrong with you. Like, it's not someone making like a misplaced joke or thinking they're funny. It's literally like, you shouldn't have had that baby.
Yeah. They're looking for a reaction.
So I'm just like, block, report, see you later. I'm quite able to think that's either not real or you're such a bad person that there is no helping you. When my husband's had a couple of things where he's found that really hard to get those things out of his head, to be honest. I guess different people react to those things in different ways. It can touch a nerve in people, can't it?
For me, I know no different. So I was 5. I had 5 years before Ross was born when I weren't aware and knew nothing. So my life has always been aware and educated about Down syndrome.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, like you said before, Leo came. He didn't know that much. He didn't know anything about it. Nothing. But you still wouldn't have commented on someone's social media because I hope you wouldn't.
No, God, no. Sorry, I should have jumped in quicker then. Of course I would.
because you're a nice member of society and a good person. And 99, like I said before, 99.9% of people There's always going to be, no matter whether it's Down syndrome or the fluffiest, cutest dog in the world, you know, someone's always going to have a problem with it. Like you said, you might cure cancer. Someone's going to have a problem with it.
Yeah. You say I wouldn't have commented, and I absolutely wouldn't have done, but I've definitely used problematic language, not in a mean way, just to be very clear here. But I've definitely used, there were things, I remember somebody said to me, I am quite an open book. I'm very happy to hold my hands up and say if I've made a mistake or I've done something wrong. And I think, you know, that's a good thing. And I'm very happy to be vulnerable as well. And I was at a Down syndrome Liverpool meetup, I think it was. And one of the other mums, their child's a little bit younger than Leo. And she was like, oh my God, this person came up to me the other day and said, oh, he doesn't look like he's got Down syndrome, which it's not the worst thing in the world to say, but it's not great because that is kind of painting it as a bad thing. Like it would be bad if you looked like you had Down syndrome. And that's probably not what they meant, but that's the impression that it gives. And she was like, oh, someone said this to me. And straight away I went, to be honest though, I said, that's the kind of thing that I might have said. Like, I don't know if I did, but it's the kind of thing where you think you're saying something nice. Or I probably would have said sorry if somebody had told me that they've just found out that their baby was going to have Down syndrome. So I think, again, it all comes back to education, doesn't it? And making people aware of why those things aren't the right thing to say.
Yeah, I'm not going to sit here and say I've not said something. I've said a lot worse than that. And I have a little brother who's got Down syndrome. It depends on your upbringing. It depends on your environment. It depends on a lot of things. And society has changed so much in 30 years that, you know, for me, I always, unless it's said in to hurt someone, they're just words.
I agree.
Like, people are going to say the wrong thing. Now, you can take offence to that and pull them up, but at the end of the day, as long as it's not come from a place to hurt you and come from, you know, there's been no malice in it. They've just said the wrong thing. If you're offended by it, then that's for you to say to them and you to take offence to it. But for me, as long as it's not said in hate, I don't even correct people.
I do. But only because I wouldn't want to be saying things to people that made them go, oh, I'd rather somebody said to me, oh, listen, would you mind not saying that? And these are the reasons why. And I'm trying to get better. Because to me, that's all part of the education of explaining to people that it would be nicer to say it a slightly different way.
We put it out in that way, but I wouldn't want to engage in that kind of, you're wrong.
Yeah, I know what you mean. And I do find it really uncomfortable to say, but that's something that's important for me.
No, of course. For me and the way we do, if you tell someone they're wrong, they go on the defensive straight away. I find anyway, that this is just me speaking out loud, when people get told they're wrong, they don't like it. Whereas if you just say it the right way over and over and over again, they'll cotton on to the right way. They'll change. Yeah.
Maybe,
I don't think me or we are in a position to tell, to pull. I mean, people might say wrong and people might call out for this and say, Christian, you and Standout are really in a position where you could change the way that people language are used, and that would really help us as a society overall. People might say that's something different, but for me, it's just about saying it the right way and doing the change slowly, because if you go, you're wrong, then people go, oh.
I know what you mean. And I also think you could say that, yes, you are in a position, but also some people, I remember I did a post, this is ages ago, and it was about person first language, which again, hold my hands up, I didn't know about before I had Leo. And I did a post very clearly saying, like, it's nicer and people in this community would prefer you to say a person with Down syndrome, not a Down syndrome person. So I did this whole thing saying Leo isn't a Down syndrome baby. He's a baby with Down syndrome. And these are the reasons why it's nicer to say it like that. The amount of comments, nice comments, by the way, that I got underneath that post going, oh, I love Down's kids. And I'm like, have you read, like, you're commenting on something that I quite clearly expressed is not the right way to say it. And in that situation, I was like, okay, it's fine. I've tried.
I get that. I completely get that. Because, look, unless it comes from some place of malice, people are trying to be nice. And if we don't talk about it, if we don't talk like the way, you know, if you feel unable to talk because you're scared of offending someone, then no one will talk. So I'm hesitant to tell people what words to use, because then they'll stop using words. Whether that's right or wrong, you know, you can have different opinions on it.
No, do you know what? I'll think about that, because I like that.
Thanks, Gemma.
I like that.
Thank you very much.
You have mentioned standout socks. So for anybody that doesn't know, just explain exactly what it is that you do, and also how most people came to know who you are.
So me, Ross, and my Mrs. Natalie set up Standout Socks because Ross never could get the job. And now we're known pretty much because we pay our staff, and that's unheard of, apparently. So we don't do volunteer work, we don't do placements, we don't do job experience. Every hour that people work at Standout, they're paid for. And that's what we believe is the right thing to do. There is a massive issue out there, in not just the UK, but I think around the globe. And we're trying to show it can be done in a different way.
I've looked up the stats from the DWP. Because I thought, I wonder how many people with Down syndrome in the UK are in paid employment. And you actually can't find the figures for that because, you know this, Christian, but for people listening, the Down syndrome is kind of lumped under learning disabilities. So that, you know, that's including a lot of different diagnoses under there. But under that heading of learning disabilities, less than 5% of people are in paid employment. But 86% of those people who have a learning disability and don't have a paid job would like one. And that, those, both of those figures are crazy, that they're so far apart.
It's madness. And you know, what frustrated me, I've got to be honest, so I was in the RAF and then I did nightclubs and then I came back. And the only reason we got here was because of COVID, to be honest with you.
Okay.
Because I had the time to kind of reset our lives and think about what we wanted to do and what was, you know, what was felt like the right thing to do. But what frustrates me is Ross used to work in a cafe which he'd pay to go to, and everyone would go there to see him, yet he'd pay to go there and not get a wage. And that's common. This is commonplace. These organizations out there that and if we can rattle a few of them and change that thinking and the way of doing things, then I'm all for that. Because listen, you can't start, so we're a business, so we don't have any donations, we don't have any volunteer work, we don't have any funding to do what we've done. Is been, you know, we could change to a CIC or a charity tomorrow and get loads of funding and get donations and fill this place for 12 hours a day with staff and not pay them a thing. It just feels like it's time to try something differently. For Ross, you know, this is why we're here, because it frustrated me what Ross was going through. So there's got to be another way. But there's nothing out there, Gemma. So it's like, it's all very well saying, you know, go and get another job, but there's only volunteer work out there where you don't get, you know, there's nothing there.
Yeah, and I think I've just had, on a recent episode, I had a conversation with a lady called Steph. So she has a daughter who has autism who is younger, but she actually works in support for autistic people post 16. And what she was saying in terms of getting into, I mean, we were specifically talking about autism, but I would imagine it's very similar with Down syndrome, is that the only people who seem to be offering that paid employment are people who have a reason to, like your brother has Down syndrome, so you understand the value that he can bring. But it only seems to be those types of people, doesn't it, who have that lived experience or a personal connection, who go, no, this will be great. And it needs to be so much wider than that, doesn't it?
And that's what we're trying to do here. That's what the plan is going forward. Just to show that it can be done, that's what drives us. Because the guy's a race. Like, work-wise, I'm not just saying like we have a great time and the music's on and we all have a laugh, which we do, but work-wise, they're ace as well. Like, you know, trying to get them to be off sick is a problem. The amount of times I've been ill because Mark brings a flu in here because he won't have a day off, you can't get stuff like that. You know, honestly, the amount of work they get through, and, you know, again, not to put everyone in boxes, but the repetitive work is not an issue. Like, they're just so happy to be involved in this thing that we're trying to build, and so happy to have a community of friends at work. And I've employed people that don't have a disability, and they've been nothing but a nightmare. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I have no problems off staff with learning disabilities. All the staff come from people that, honestly, I can't vouch for people with learning disabilities in employment enough. They come in, do their job. They're early most of the time, 25 minutes early, and you're like, Oliver, you can't come in 25 minutes early because I might not be here in time. He's like, okay. And then he'll still turn up 25 minutes early the next week. The fact that we've managed to grow this and pay for every single hour that the guys have ever worked, ace. The fact that we're nearly on 2,000 paid hours now, it can be done. Me, Natalie, Ross went through 2 years of not getting paid. Me and Natalie went through 2 years of having free jobs. Me, you know, it's not happened overnight. And it's so easy to revert back to a CIC and a charity and take the funding and take the volunteer work and take this, that unless you're in a position like I've been in, where watching Ross pay to go to work and then all of us bounce in there to see Ross, yeah, he's getting no money. Like, that's what frustrated me the most. Like, yeah. Ross is filling the place, yet he's not getting paid. Like, yeah. What? How's that work? Like, these other organisations selling stuff on the basis that staff with learning disabilities are involved in it. Why are you not paying the staff?
Yeah. You mentioning the word charity, because you aren't a charity, are you? You're a business with valued employees who are getting paid.
We're a business with investors, and we'll continue to grow like that. The staff are all paid. They're all on full. They're all on contracts. You know, they've all got proper contracts, which was something we had to navigate because it had never been done apparently when we first did it. So we had to go through a proper HR company, etc., to set it all up because it had never been done before. So we're just showing it a different way of doing it. Now, I'm not saying I'm right. I'm not saying we're right.
I am.
Oh, that's up to you. But there has to be. We've been going round down this funnel for 50, 60 years and nothing's changed.
Yeah.
Otherwise, the stat wouldn't be 95%. And I can tell you the stat for Down syndrome is probably closer to 99%, 98%.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, nothing's changed in 50 years. And there was, I don't know if you remember Rempoy, it might have been.
Rempoy
was a business that was set up and then it was heavily subsidised by the government and they used to employ people with learning disabilities into work like us in like picking, packing, factory sort of work. And then because they relied so much on the subsidies from the government, Tony Blair pulled the subsidies and Rempoy ended. If funding stops for charities, it's hard times and people can't donate, there's just got to be a different way.
Yeah.
And I'm not stupid. You know, our socks are great. I'm not going to say our socks are rubbish because they are fantastic. But without our staff, standouts, nothing. Zero. Like, we're just another sock company in a bunch of other sock companies, but we're directly impacting a problem that's out there.
Yeah. And you're doing a great job.
And if other people are listening to me and think that's a good business idea, then great, because other people with learning disabilities will get paid. Because you can't just continually, it's slavery for me, take advantage of people with learning disabilities into roles that, you know, we went on to BBC Breakfast. There was a guy that was in Waitrose for 6 years.
Yeah.
Volunteering. There's no progress. You can't just volunteer. Because, and the reason why they get away with it is because there's nothing else out there.
Yeah, it was horrible, that story, wasn't it? Because that was the one where his mum went in, didn't he? And said, like, I'd like him to get paid. And they were like, see you later. No.
Yeah.
Yeah, crazy.
But, I mean, that's just scratching the surface. That's,
yeah.
There'll be people that have been in Waitrose for 20 years. There'll be people that have been in, you know, I'm generalising. I'm not, you know, there'll be people that are worse than that. But what frustrates me the most is when people with learning disabilities will pay organisations to go and do something, yet the organisations are set up to help them. If you're a CEO sat on north of 70 grand a year, you should be able to come up with ways, innovative ways, so that your members don't pay for your services. Otherwise, it's a sinking ship.
100%.
That's what we're trying to change.
And I can also confirm the socks are great. I've bought multiple pairs for presents for people and stuff, and they are fantastic socks. We've got quite a lot of your socks in our house.
Thank you. And sorry for getting on my IRs that you brought
no,
it
down. No, because I get really frustrated with it. It's important. You know, that's why I want to talk to you about, you know, aside from just the, you know, the growing up element of having a sibling with Down syndrome, this is half the reason I wanted to have you on to talk about exactly this. And if you weren't passionate about it, Christian, you wouldn't be doing the right job.
No, but like I said before, we've got, Leo's lucky enough to have siblings. There'll be people with Down syndrome out there that don't have siblings or don't have the family structure or, you know, and through our being in Tesco now, we've started to work with a company in Turkey that employ people with learning disabilities to handle our socks into Tesco. And I lived in Bulgaria, so I'm not saying that the UK is further on than Bulgaria, but you tend to think that we are a little bit further on socially. And if we can affect some of these countries that still have the same opinion that we had 40 years ago, and before you know it, you know, that's what I see in the future. Like, it could just be a force for, like, Standout will outgrow me, Natalie and Ross. It needs to. It could be such a force for good. It needs to, like, I am not the right person. Natalie's not the right person. Ross is not the right person to take this forward. Like, this, what we've created has the potential to change so much and affect so many lives and change so many opinions. And that's what I want for it. Like, it could be huge everywhere. And we're not the first people that have done it. You know, I don't profess to be the first person to start a sock company based around Down syndrome. There's other people out there that have done it. But if we could all come together and really push this.
I like to think, though, that there is a kind of a cultural shift now, not even just in terms of learning disabilities, but people are more interested in how things are made, in what the factory conditions are. You know, there's a big pushback against things like Shein and Temu and, you know, all that fast fashion, where we're aware now that those people aren't being treated nicely. And I do think there's a much bigger conversation happening about, is what we're buying ethical, which, and this is part of that, isn't it? People are wanting to know who is making it. Are they being treated well? Where's it coming from? So I think, I completely agree with you with all of that. I will put the social handles and the website in the show notes, but you're very easy to Google. So, you know, people aren't going to have a problem finding you, but I will share those links in the show notes. I always finish the podcast with the same two questions, but they're not really relevant to you because they're very much focused on parents. So I'm going to come up with a totally different question to ask you to finish off this podcast. And that is, what advice would you give to a parent who is worried about how Down syndrome or any other diagnosis really will affect their other children?
In my case, it's been nothing but a positive, from probably the way my personality is built to what I've been, you know, the environment that I've been put in because of it. You're always going to find that 0.1% of people that, you know, will never understand it, but you'll gain a lot more from not just the family, like the way it just pulls everyone into the center of the universe. Like I say, I was blessed with some fantastic friends that took our kid under his wing and built it up as nothing but a positive that he was my brother. You know, it was, you know, you bringing your kid out, you know, he's funny. Like, you know, it was always a positive. So, you know, it's not the future you, like I said before, probably had planned in your head for 9 months, or it's not the end. If anything, it's the start of a new fun-filled future of you know, and there's going to be ups and downs. I never felt that as a, I only felt ups as a brother, but I can understand that there will be ups and downs, and frustrations and etc. But it's just the way you frame it. You know, it's always been framed to me as a positive to by my parents, and because it was framed as a positive, I took it as a positive into my friends and outer networks. So yeah, frame it as a positive, and it will ultimately be a positive.
Beautiful words. Christian, I really appreciate you talking to me, and I love your point of view on a lot of things that we've spoken about. And also, I would like to say thank you so much for introducing me to a couple of the guys who work with you. Because just before we jumped on the recording, you brought Martha and Mark in, and it was really nice to meet them and have a little chat. So thank you for that as well.
No worries at all. Nice to speak to you.
Oh, I mean, it was one of those episodes where I wished I hadn't pressed stop recording when I did, because me and Christian actually had a conversation afterwards. And in that episode, he was mentioning about people he knew with Down syndrome paying to go and do stuff. And I wasn't really sure what he meant. And after we stopped recording, he actually elaborated on that. And I'm not going to mention any of the places or any of the people that he said. But what he was talking about with people paying was them literally paying to go to work at a charity that was set up to help them. So he was saying that one of the guys that works with him will pay like 60 odd quid a day to go and make something that is then sold under the premise that it was made by somebody with Down syndrome or some kind of learning disability. And that seems very wrong to me. If you're almost promoting your business saying, oh, you know, we've got people with learning disabilities making these products and working for us and you're making money from them, then pay the bloody people, and certainly don't make them pay to go. I assumed that people were volunteering, which is also not right. But the fact that people are actually paying to go to work. And when we kind of spoke about that afterwards, Christian was saying, you know, but the family's options are basically have them at home with them where they aren't really gaining anything, they're not really being stimulated, or pay for them to go and do this work. That's absolutely, that's, it just feels so wrong, doesn't it? And it feels like there are obviously people like Christian and Standout Socks doing brilliant things and doing it properly and, you know, running a business and paying people for the time that they're putting in and trying to make a change. But my God, there's a long way to go. And I don't think that I realised how far it was that we needed to go until I spoke to Christian, actually, until I Googled those stats from the DWP about how many people with a learning disability are in paid employment. And it is crazy low. But do you know what? Overall, I really enjoyed that chat. And Christian's left me with some things to think about, actually. I love some of the ways that he views things. And it's so nice to hear he had such a positive experience growing up. And I loved how he was talking about how inclusive his friends were. And just because they enjoyed hanging out with Ross, not because they're like doing him a favour. Or I just love that. And it's kind of calmed some of my anxiety about the future. If I'm being honest, I try not to go there too much in my head, but that's made me feel nice. And I hope that it's done the same for you. I hope that it's made you feel better about things that you may have been worried about. I hope that it's made you feel more hopeful. But like I said, definitely in terms of work, clearly a lot needs to change. So that's it for another episode. I would love it if you would like, subscribe, rate, review, all of that. And I will be back with another guest for you next week.